Good evening, everyone. Hi, I'm Pam Stack, your host, and this is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Tonight, I am so grateful to have with me a wonderful author who's also been a dear Facebook friend. We've never had an opportunity to meet in person, but we're going to have fun tonight. I'm going to introduce you to Lisa Alber. So don't go away because she has some great stories to tell us about. Welcome back. This is Authors on the Air. I'm so happy that I have Lisa Alber on with me tonight. I think that she's really just a cool lady to talk to. And I love doing research about my guests, and I had a particularly good time reading the bio and investigating Lisa's background. So she's always been a scribbler. I love that about her. Since she was old enough to write, the first thing she wrote and the first rejection she got, which is just cracked me up, was when she sent a thank you note to her aunt, Bernie, except where she comes from, they say aunt. And so she wrote it A-N-T instead of A-U-N-T. And so I guess a parent giggled about that, which I thought was hysterical. But she kept on writing. And so I pulled this quote out of her bio because I thought it was just so perfect for her. If you're not familiar, by the way, Lisa's written Kill Moon. She has Whispers in the Mist is her current book, and her third book is getting ready to be released. We're going to talk to her about that. But this is what she said about herself. I love this. I remember my first serious creative writing effort, a Shakespearean-style sonnet, and how thrilled I was when my English teacher gave copies of it to everyone in class and then read it aloud. My writing. Most especially, I remember almost fainting when the senior I secretly love waylaid me after class to compliment my sonnet called Amidst the Shades of Mine. Without further ado, I want to introduce Lisa Alber. Lisa, welcome so much to Authors on the Air, and thank you so much for being with me tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here and to talk to you at long last. Gosh, how long have we been friends on Facebook? It's crazy, like years, right?
I know. Years. It's crazy.
And you kind of
feel like
you already know the person.
I know. Yes.
It's great.
So here's the things that I found out about you that I didn't know about. I did not know that you won a Rosebud Award for Kill Moon. Congratulations on that. And I love the fact that your work has been called atmospheric.
Atmospheric
and complex, and with enough twists and turns to keep you guessing. What a delightful thing to say about a writer. How wonderful.
That is wonderful. I mean, it's so funny when I'm like cooped up in my house and writing, you know, you don't know how it's going to like how it's going to be out in the real world when real people actually read it. And so when I get, like, blurbs like that, people who say it's atmospheric and brooding and twists and turns, I'm like, wow. I'm always kind of amazed. Like, my brain came up with that. You know, I'm a real simple person in my everyday life. So it's just always, it's just always crazy that somehow with my stories, I am kind of complex. It's like all my complexities come out in my stories, whereas in my everyday life, I'm just kind of simple. I'm walking my dog. I'm hanging out with my friends. I'm drinking my wine. You know, it's really funny. I know. I love it. I love that. I love the creative process.
I do too. And you know, here's the funny thing. I'm reading your bio and I'm thinking, oh my God, we were switched at birth, or we were, you know, we're like sisters from another mista or something, because you write. I mean, first of all, you wrote thank you notes, and I did too, and I'm sure mine were just crazy, you know. And then you were a crybaby, and I think I was too. And
oh,
only because I ran around, you know, we played with all the boys in the neighborhood, and you know, every time they pushed you down, I would cry. But then I'm reading further, and you're a Scrabble and word jumble whiz and word search person. Oh my God, give me one of those little pocketbooks on an airplane. I'm happy.
Oh,
you could send me around the world for days and days and days. And you tried to teach yourself Spanish. Me too, girlie. I tell you what.
You did? Oh my God.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
We were sisters.
I only know the cuss words, though. The cuss words. And you like geography, and I love geography. Nobody teaches geography anymore. I love geography.
I know. I still have
an
old atlas and a globe.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I just love all that stuff. Yeah.
I have a map in my over my washer and dryer, so I know what you mean. I love that. It's almost obscure now, and it's really too bad because couldn't you remember it? Do you have a globe that has like the mountain ranges, you can feel them and all that on it?
Yeah,
you used to.
I remember that from childhood.
Yes. You know, and you could go for it, and if you read, like you read the Agatha Christie books, I read all of them in order because I didn't know you weren't supposed to. So, you know, Agatha Christie wrote like 110 books. I just read them in order. I didn't know. What the heck?
I remember I didn't understand a word. Nancy Drew were great. I moved on to, I moved on to like, what was the Mysterious Affair at Stiles was her first book. And I probably read that when I was 13 or 14 years old. I didn't know what the hell was going on, right? What did I know about like English, you know, the English way of phrasing things and English aristocracy and the class system? I had no clue, but I was still hooked. And that's, you know,
Absolutely.
That's just Agatha Christie's style. She's so good at those kind of mysteries.
And there were
the traditional
skinny little books that you could get off the spinning racks, you know, it was like a five and dime store then, you know, I don't even know. I wouldn't even know how to equate that nowadays, but tons of fun. Oh, I hear you. And you read Rebecca.
Rebecca
of Sunnybrook Farm was your favorite. Oh my God. It was like one of my favorite. That and Pippi Longstocking.
Pippi Longstocking. I remember going to the Pippi Longstocking movies when I was a kid, and I didn't realize they were foreign films. And I remember being so crushed when I finally, after a film or whatever, I realized that her lips weren't moving. It was in the same way that the English dubbed languages. And I was so crushed. I could not see another one of those Pippi Longstocking movies after that. Because she, you know, somehow that would didn't it, it was like, no, it was a fake. Why aren't her lips moving the right way? That's the sensitive child in me. I probably cried. I mean, knowing me since I was such a crybaby.
But now she's all grown up, and she's writing beautiful books that are getting wonderful rave reviews. I looked at your Amazon page just for kicks, and I have to tell you, people love your work. They love it. They think that you're fantastic. And reviews are just amazing. So I will tell you right now, for Lisa's first book, Kill Moon, a County Clare Mystery, if you are smart, you will go right now and get – in Kindle Unlimited, you can get it for free. So hurry and go over there. Because then the next book is Whispers in the Mist that came out last year. Pardon me?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I was confused there that it was free. Is that's Kindle Unlimited?
Kindle Unlimited.
Yeah,
NKU,
I don't know anything really about that. Oh, okay.
That's
so
okay.
It's free. Okay.
But it's
that's
a good,
good
thing. Yeah, it's a good thing. It's a very good thing. And then you have... you have a new book coming out, and so we're going to talk about all of them because I love the titles of your books. I love the titles of your books. They're so good. So we'll get to Path into Darkness in a little bit, but let's first of all talk about you and writing, because you've been doing it all your life, obviously.
I have been.
And
I have
you
been.
Knew that you knew you're going to be a writer. You just knew it. You had it was in the stars
no.
for you.
Well,
really?
Whether or not it was in the stars, I didn't know I wanted to be a writer because, I mean, I was always a scribbler and I was always writing and I was always a wanderer at heart. That's why I love geography and learning languages
yes.
and stuff. And I think me being a wanderer is part of that creative process with my writing because I'm wandering in my mind, basically, in the realm of story. It's the same kind of wanderlust. Wandering the globe, wandering my mind. It's all the same thing for me. But when I was a kid, see, the kind of family I grew up with was very pretty Germanic and practical. And there were three of us daughters.
Wow.
And my dad was very interested in us being able to be independent women who could support ourselves. So that meant, like, in college, you know, you study like businessy stuff or accounting or God forbid.
Right.
And like none of us were like, or computer science. One of my sisters is a computer science person. The other one's an accountant. And then I got the creative gene, right? And so I floundered for a long time trying to figure it out because I knew I should probably be practical. So to answer your question, I didn't actually know I wanted to be a writer from a young age because in my family, that wasn't in the realm of possibility. You just didn't consider
sure,
it,
it's like
right?
You can do that but get a real job, one of those things.
Yeah, yeah. So you like to write and be creative. That's great. But when you get into a good college, you know, you're going to study, you know, business or accounting or something like that.
Right. Right.
Yeah, which I actually
could be a nurse
did,
or something, sure.
Yeah, be a nurse,
yeah.
Although I suck at science, so I could never have been a nurse.
Yeah.
Oy. Yeah, science and me are not friends.
I hear you.
So, yeah, it wasn't until later, like after I was in after college. Well, I was writing, then I wrote that poem, and I started writing poetry. When I got that poem you mentioned from high school, the Shakespearean sonnet, that was my first experience with kind of like having something I've done creatively that came out of my soul have positive feedback. I was like, oh, you know, people can like the things that come out of my soul. But, you know, I was tiptoeing. I didn't go from there to like, I want to be a writer. I was like, I went from there I think I'm going to write a little bit more and, you know, do more writing and stuff like that. Meanwhile, I'm living life, right? I have to graduate college and get a pseudo career, what I thought was going to be a career, which was a joke. I was in finance, actually. I'm not really good with numbers either. So that
talk about a left and a right brain screw up there, you know. That was definitely not for you.
Yeah.
I love the name of your sonnet, though, Amidst the Shades of Mine. How in the world did your high school brain ever think of something like that? It's just an exceptionally wonderful title. And it sounds to me like, I know that you love Ireland, and we're going to have to hear the story about how your love affair with Ireland. But it sounds like you have this Irish soul in you. It's there.
Yeah.
It manifests with maybe the titles of your books, obviously with your sonnet writing. And here's the last line of your bio, which still, it grabs me. It really does. You say, that's me, the girl embroiled in an ongoing love affair with words. You really do have an exceptional way with words, Lisa.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for saying that. It's always been the way I've communicated. We all communicate with words, right? That's not saying anything very deep, but
people aren't as cautious. You're selective with your words, and that's a big difference.
I think it's the written word, though. There's words spoken and there's words written, and I've always been a written word person. So in any given situation, like, if I'm having troubles, I'm having trouble with a friend or a boyfriend or whatever, and I need to communicate with them, starting to get frustrated with something, just, you know, human relationships. My first instinct when I want to communicate my true feelings is to write them down. I'd rather write them down and hand them a letter than actually talk to them in spoken words. So I have to really watch that because my first instinct is always to write. Write, it's the way I process. So I have like all those journals that's mentioned in my bio on the website. Yeah. I have like my journals from childhood where it's just the way that I process. It's like things don't seem real to me unless I've written them down somehow. So I do have
really cool.
something. Yeah, it's interesting. It's a language thing. It's a writing thing. It's just the way my brain is wired.
It is your writer's brain. There's no doubt. I want to talk about your first book, Kilmoon.
Okay.
But first of all, let's talk about Ireland and how that
Ireland.
Plays such a part of your life. Yes.
Yeah, Ireland. Well, so obviously, I mean, maybe or maybe it's not obvious, but I'm Irish-American. And most specifically, as I was growing up, I was always told I take after the O'Brien side of the family, which is my father's mother's side of the family. They were very Irish, and she was a total Irish matriarch, very Catholic. And apparently, I'm the spitting image of her, kind of that side of the family. I have, like, brown, curly hair and the fair skin and blue eyes, and I'm the only cousin on my dad's side who has that particular coloring. And my aunties, my Aunt Bernie, spelled A-U-N-T,
right.
not A-N-T, my Aunt Bernie would say, oh, Lisa, too bad you never got to meet your Grandma O'Brien, because she's the only grandparent that I didn't get to meet because she had died before I was born. Oh, too bad you didn't get to meet your Grandma O'Brien. You would have loved her. You two would have gotten on. You guys are so much alike. And here, let me show you these pictures, these old photos of my Grandma O'Brien when she was young, I should say. And I did look like her. I was like, that's where I come from. It's like suddenly I'm not a changeling in my own family. I can see where I come from.
Right.
So from there, yeah. I started to have kind of a fascination with Ireland, just because of that connection that I never got to meet her. So I was like, oh, what is it? They would always say she's so Irish. What does that mean to be so Irish? Like, well, and she was kind of tempestuous and fiery and emotional, and she's just this character. She's a total character. And then as I was getting older, you know, as an adult, I started to read memoirs set in Ireland, people who were expats. Most notably, I read a memoir by a woman in Boston who had lived in Ireland for a while called Boredom and Kimmage. So it was about the state of women in Ireland. And her descriptions of the, I'm kind of making a long story long here rather than short.
That's okay.
But her
it's interesting to me.
Okay, cool. Her descriptions of the landscape, I was just like, oh, God, I got to get to Ireland. And then when I started to write I started to write my first novel, which my first written novel is the novel before Kilmoon, which never got published. I mean, you call it like it could be called the doorstop novel, like make it into a doorstop.
Right.
It's never going to see the light of day. But it was set in Ireland,
right.
And it was kind of inspired by her descriptions of Ireland, and that the atmospheric thing you mentioned is kind of was inspired by some of those memoirs with the landscape and stuff. And when I finally got over to Ireland for real to do novel research for that first novel, that didn't go
right.
anywhere.
Sure. Don't worry, the IRS doesn't listen in. Yeah, I know, research. Okay, it's released, whatever.
Yeah, research, yeah. got to do the research, right?
Absolutely. Well, walk in your character's footsteps, baby. I gotcha. No, wink, wink. We're cool. Don't worry. How long did you stay the first time you went?
I was probably there for about 3 weeks. I stayed in the West. And when I finally got there and I saw it in real life, I was like, oh, my God, I love Ireland. I just, like, sunk into my soul. And that book never went anywhere. But while I was during that first trip, I found the inspirations for what became Kilmoon. So then when I set aside that drawer novel, the doorstop novel, I started working on Kill Moon, and it was inspired by that first trip. In part. Yeah.
How fabulous. So, I have a niece who lives in Ireland who grew up in just outside of Atlanta. She went to school in Georgia and had an opportunity to go and work for a nonprofit in Ireland. And
lucky. Oh, man.
Days. She
That's
doesn't
awesome.
Want to ever. I mean, she comes back for holidays, you know, a couple times a year. She loves it. She loves it. And her younger sister, my other niece, went over there and, you know, is ready to move over there too. They absolutely adore it. So
it's
I think
wonderful.
That, you know, I can remember I went to parochial school as a youngster, and we were taught by the nuns, and then the Sisters of Mercy were mostly from Ireland. So
Sisters of Mercy? You were in the Sisters of Mercy school?
Yes.
You're the Sisters of Mercy.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
I'm doing research
yes.
on them.
I'm telling you. But so those nuns, the teaching nuns for Sisters of Mercy, all were brought over from Ireland. And so to my young ear, to my elementary school ear, I was so used to hearing the Irish brogue that it didn't sound unusual to me to hear it. Only after I became an adult did I start to, you know, that I noticed, I'd say, oh, you're from Ireland and versus Wales or Scotland or something like that. I could really tell the difference simply because I was so attuned to it. But they told a lot of stories about Ireland and how beautiful it was.
Oh, bad.
It was an interesting experience. Yeah. Interesting experience. Yes. So the Sisters of Mercy loved little Pam. I have to tell you, I was a good little girl.
Were you a good girl?
They did not know. There was a hellion brewing inside once I left sixth grade and went to public school. But that's okay. They taught me my love for reading and for writing cursive and writing letters and thank you notes and all. So I understand it's just something at a cellular level. That part I get. Let me just take a break here for a second. Amy, if you're listening, this is your chance to call in. The number is 347-633-9609. Call in, everyone, and say hi to Lisa. She's just really super. And I'll tell you what, you can have your choice of either Kill Moon or Whispers in the Mist. I'm going to send you an ebook if you call in. 347-633-9609. I am speaking with the magnificent Lisa Alver, who just is a sister from another Mista. I'm absolutely certain that, you know, she was supposed to be with me getting her knuckles wrapped in Immaculate Conception School run by the Sisters of Mercy with their Irish brogues. But oh yes, but I was a good little kid in my little uniform and, you know, lacy ruffled socks with my Oxford shoes and so on.
Oh,
yeah, it was.
You're probably
I didn't have
really
pictures.
Cute. You're so
I was
cute.
Cute.
I'm sure.
I was a cute little kid. Now forget it. No cuteness. It's hell and devilish right now.
Yeah. A good kind of devilish, man. A good kind of devilish.
No, wicked, mean, and nasty. I'll tell you what. So let's talk about titles, because you are truly a very fine wordsmith. I love the fact that you have a love affair with language, and that's really important to me when I look for writers to read. So how is it that you know how to name a book so well, or a title of a sonnet? Do you give it a lot of thought, Lisa?
Well, I mean, there's the publisher aspect. The publishers,
right?
They come up with a lot of the stuff. Like for the first book was more me, Kill Moon. That Kilmoon. It's a place name. For a church,
right.
That's kind of a set piece in the novel. And I, the funny thing is, I actually don't think I'm particularly good at coming up with titles, to be honest. Amidst the Shades of Mine when I was in high school, that was like a moment of inspiration. I mean, that is a good title.
Yeah, it's really great.
But yeah, I was beside myself trying to come up with a title for Kilmoon. I was like Kilmoon's daughter. I had got all these crazy titles. And then, you know, to be honest, like Whispers in the Mist and Touch of Darkness, Path into Darkness. See, I don't even remember. It's Path into Darkness, the third one coming out.
I was going
to
correct you
darkness.
About the title of your own book. Don't worry.
How could I not know the title of my own book? That's really funny. Oh, my God.
Let's talk to Amy. She's on the line, okay?
Okay,
so let's talk to Amy. Hi, Amy. How are you? Welcome to Authors on the Air.
Hi, Pam.
Hi, Amy. You're on live with – yes, we can hear you. You're on live with Lisa. Go ahead.
Hey, Amy. Lisa.
How are you? She's another Facebook – Amy's another Facebook friend from years and
yes.
that we've never met because we've never met, right, in person
well,
at a conference?
You keep signing up for Malice, and then, like, something comes up, and I haven't been going to BoucherCon because before I started writing and before, like, it was a thing, as opposed to just me going, I can do this. I can type all this stuff up. Somebody will want it one day. I was only going to one a year.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, everybody, Amy's first novel is coming out in 2017, right, or 2018?
I think it's 2018, but we're talking about you.
Oh, I know. I just wanted to point that out.
Lisa, I already told her that when she gets her book ready and she's going to debut, then she can come on the show and you and I can go ahead and have fun with her, okay? When she debuts her first book. Yeah.
Yeah,
and
so put her on the spot with lots
and
of tough questions.
I brought virtual chocolate eclairs for everybody, and this is how you're going to treat me.
Yeah,
you neglected to mention that. Otherwise, I would have said we'd be nice. But since you're now saying it, I guess it's a little too late to start being nice. No. I'm just teasing. Amy and I have been chatting on Facebook not for a long time, but you know my Facebook page is a public page, so anybody can chat on there. But because we always had so much fun talking, we decided to become. We are friends now, aren't we, Amy? Yeah, I think we are.
So.
Yeah, because, yeah, we are. So,
real virtual friends.
We are real virtual friends now. It's really fun. Kind of just the same way Lisa and I have been. We kind of have been, I don't know, off and on for years now. So,
yeah.
Any questions for Lisa, Amy?
Yeah.
I was just wondering, atmospheric. Excellent point, because it was actually the one I wanted to talk about. I pulled Kilmoon up, and I was starting back up on it today, so I'd reacquaint myself with it because it was a couple of years ago that I read it. And I started to wonder, you live in the Pacific Northwest, pretty rainy, pretty wet, pretty green area.
Yeah.
As is the stereotype of Ireland, do you find that where you are helps keep you in the mood?
That's a good question.
Not in a weird way.
No, not in a weird way. And actually,
not in a weird way.
No one's ever asked me that before, but that's a good question. I think so.
A great question.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Because I can go out into the forest or out in outside Portland, out into the countryside here, and on a rainy day where it's really green and verdant, it can definitely remind me of Ireland and get me into that mood. And actually, you know, I actually grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area along the coast. And we used to get a lot of fog, and I used to go walking up in the Marin Headlands in the fog, and that was, I think that sunk into me too. That whole atmospheric thing is just in me since I was a child, and so I think that's part of the reason why I love Ireland too, and part of the reason why I love the Pacific Northwest. Even though in winter, I have to admit, like by the time January rolls around, I'm like, oh my God, I've got seasonal affective disorder. Someone help me. Get me some vitamin D and sunshine, please.
Oh, listen, come live where I am on Southwest Florida's coast. And, you know, you'll be like, please, just a little bit. We had 4 days where it actually got to 40 degrees, I think, you know, so trust me.
Oh.
It's there's there's no perfection anywhere except for maybe San Diego. It might be the perfect city for weather.
San Diego, yeah, it's got pretty perfect weather down there, that's for sure.
Yeah, it really does. So, Amy, you ask good questions. Think of some more. I'm going to sit back and relax. you just kind of take over.
I actually have experience with Catholic school as well, and I thought that was kind of interesting that
you guys were talking
about that while I was frantically trying to figure out how to get my phone open and get the number into it, because apparently I have somehow lost all ability to use a phone all of a sudden. but I did. I went to Catholic school. I went to a Catholic school with a little bit more of a progressive order. There was no hitting. The nuns were really cool. It was the Sisters of the Immaculate Heart. I guess that's an East Coast thing. But I distinctly remember my mom worked, and not a lot of kids at my mom's at my school had moms that worked, and obviously my dad worked, and we didn't have a bus. So I didn't have any way to get home. My mom couldn't come pick me up, and I lived too far away to walk. So the nuns would take me into the convent with them after school.
Really?
And they would give me a snack, and they would help me with their homework. They were lovely, lovely women.
Oh.
Just to bring up a point that you and I were talking about, Pam, yesterday, actually. I learned all my best curse words from those nuns.
Oh, they're awesome.
Really?
The Irish just in general are so great with swearing.
Oh my goodness. Those convent doors shut.
So funny.
The wimples come off. And it gets real in that place.
That's so funny.
Awesome.
You know, I think I'm older than you guys, but because I remember when, you know, studying like for First Holy Communion and you know, catechism, CCD classes and all those things. And the mass was still said in Latin. And the nuns, this is really gross when I think about it. When we were practicing for First Holy Communion, the nuns would take a pencil, not with the lead side, but the eraser side. And, you know, you had to hold out your tongue and everything. And then they'd touch everybody's tongue with the same freaking pencil. You know, now it would be like, no way, Jose.
Oh, my God.
You know, I mean, listen, things, times are different. But anyway, and they still wore the long habits. At first, they wore only black with the white trim. And then I don't remember if it was after Vatican II or what, but anyway, they were able to wear the all-white habits, which in Southeast Florida was really a lot better than having to wear those. But they had the long robes and the long rosary that went all the way down. I liked the rosary hanging down real long, you know. I thought that was really cool. But no way on God's green earth did you want to ever have to go to the convent for anything, because that, to me, I mean, we all thought that was like going into catacombs or something, you know, really stark. I don't know. I have no idea what it was like. It probably was not. But, you know,
and now you know differently, and you're disappointed.
Is that how it is,
really?
Pardon me?
I said, imagine now that you know how disappointed your inner child must be that you didn't know that behind the doors of those convents is essentially like a nail salon, but, you know, with Brides of Christ.
Oh, God, it's so
funny. Brides of Christ.
You're giving each other pedicures? Were they giving each other pedicures?
Oh, no.
The
nuns didn't wear makeup. They didn't wear nail polish or anything. Listen, the only ones that we heard about that, and it tippled at all, were the priests. And because my mom was real involved in the church and, you know, in the women's group and all that kind of stuff. And she, you know, my mom was so funny because she was a New Englander, and so propriety was real important to her. And so she kind of like make an action with her hand as though she was tippling back something, you know, when she'd talk about one of the priests. It was kind of like a little silent gesture of hers, you know, and she'd wink. And that was her thing, like, oh, the priest used to like to take a nip, and so did the nuns occasionally. And so I just didn't think of them as normal adults. They were not normal adults. Those were, like you said, Brides of Christ. So I have to keep that in mind. That's going to keep me up laughing all night. I know. But the really cool thing was they did tell a lot of stories about Ireland. And the priests, a lot of the priests were from Ireland, too. Yeah, so I feel like, you know, we're connected somehow. I say it every single night I'm on the radio. We are 6 degrees of separation somehow. All of us are. You know, it's just amazing to me.
I agree.
Amy, stay on the line because I want you to be able to jump in anytime. Lisa, talk about your writing process. What is it? Are you a disciplined writer? Do you, like, go to work at a certain hour and then you write and then you say, okay, it's time to go home now? Whether it's in, you know, a room, a coffee shop, an office, or whatever, wherever it is you write, are you very disciplined, or does it happen in a much more kind of haphazard way?
I am disciplined up to a point. Like, when I am in serious first draft my writing mode, I'm very disciplined. Like, I set myself a word count per day, and it might be 750 words, or usually it's 1,000 words per day because I'm behind schedule. And so I'm very, so I'm very disciplined, but it's like when I'm kind of between books, when I've handed off a book and I know I should be getting started writing the next one, that's where I'm kind of haphazard and a little bit goofing around and fooling around and stuff. It's like I need to fill the well. So I'm not disciplined for a while, and then I'm like, oh, okay, I've got it. I've got whatever the hook I need to start the first draft. And then I'm disciplined. And then it's like, got to get this done, you know. But, like, right now I'm in the fooling around stage right now because I'm kind of I'm a little bit between. I haven't started writing the next book yet, you know, and I'm kind of a little bit between books. And so I'm just kind of exploring and catching up on life and stuff a little bit right now. And I don't do outlines per se. We talk about pantsters and outliners. Writing books. Yeah, you know what that is already.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm kind of a pantser in the sense that I don't write an official outline. I do a lot of character analyses. I do research. I do character analyses and a lot of brainstorming. And then I get kind of the arc, the overall arc of the story, where I kind of know, since I write mystery, I know who dies, and I know who I think the culprit is, and I kind of know that I have series characters, Danny and Merritt. They're not married. For those of you who haven't read my books, these are Danny's a detective, and Merritt is an expat Californian who's living in Ireland. And I know what their arc is because they have their subplot arcs, right? Because they're the continuing characters. They have their life in Ireland, and so I follow them. I kind of know, like, the gist, but I don't know how I'm going to get from point to point. Like, from the, I don't have an outline of scene by scene by scene. And so I run into problems with that when I'm trying to get my 1,000 words done a day. And then I come up to a point where I'm like, oi, I can't do my 1,000 words today because I haven't figured out what the next, like, 3 or 4 scenes are in this. And so it's a bit of a kind of a being half a panster, you know, being self-disciplined in one way, but being a total panster on the other. So it kind of creates havoc. It's kind of a little bit of a chaotic creative process.
So here's my question. When you set a word count for yourself like that, I have heard from some authors and you know, certainly not all, but that sometimes if you're not careful, you're writing to fill the word count. And then, you know, it's wrong, obviously. You don't want to just write for the sake of word count, right? Am I right about that?
It depends on – no, I don't think there's a right or a wrong.
Okay.
It just depends on what your creative process is. Like, for some people,
so
like for me,
you get the words out there versus
you have to get,
and you can edit it later.
Yes. Yeah. Ultimately, you have to get that freaking first draft done. And if setting yourself a goal of doing 1,000 words a day, even if they're crap words, if they get you through a scene to the next scene that you know, you're going to go back and revise, pretty soon you will hit that, the end of the first draft. And then you can really work on a story in your revisions. So, yeah, I think it's just different for different writers, I think, There's no right or wrong. Yeah. So I'm of the kind of like get those 1,000 words down, even if they're crap.
So you're very meticulous about your character descriptions. Would you say that you start with a character, or do you start with a story and then add your series characters in, or do you put them in a situation where you say, what if? I want to know which comes first, the chicken or the egg, essentially, the character or the story.
For me, what comes, so I'm thinking of Path into Darkness. I don't want to say too much about it because even if I say too much, it might be a spoiler. But for example, for Path into Darkness, the book coming out in August, it was a what if question. I had this really strange thought about healers and about sociopaths and things like that. I'm not going to say exactly what it was, but it was like a what if.
That's okay. It's fascinating already.
And I was like, and so it's what if, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, whoa, you know, and it stuck with me. Like, I can do a whole story around this what if. And then that's not character. That was kind of character because when we're talking about healers and sociopaths, you're immediately, I'm starting on a creative process of thinking about who these characters are. So I think I do. I start with character. I'm such a character person. I do these in-depth character analyses. And then when it comes to my series characters, Danny and Merritt, I know where they ended up in the previous novel, you know, how they are, where they are in their lives. And I know where they want to go. I know what their conflicts and interpersonal stuff is going to be. And so I explore that before I start writing too. And then it all kind of...
I'm wondering, are we peeling away the layers of your characters as we go? Do we learn more about them as each book comes up, or are they? Do they come to us fully fleshed out?
No.
And are you?
They're not fully.
Are you learning about them?
I'm learning about them. Yeah, no, they're not like in Kill Moon. They're not fully fleshed out. Like, for example, take Merritt, the expatriate Californian who moves in Kill Moon, the first novel. She moves to Ireland to meet her biological father for the first time, right? And she's of a certain personality type. She's kind of reserved and closed off a little bit because of traumas in her background and things like that. But I noticed when I was writing Path into Darkness, which is the third one, that, and even some of my readers said that, that she's starting to open up. So her personality is changing a little bit. And she's growing. She's growing as a person, right? And
I love that.
And that is so fun. And meanwhile,
now,
Danny, you
know more about your characters than we do, or are you learning them as we're learning them?
I know more because I've done some character now. Yeah, I know more, like more of their background that may or may not ever appear in one of the novels, but yeah, I know more about their background, but at the same time, new things always crop up where I am still learning about them as I go along. And Danny's really interesting, my detective, because of his marital, you know, he's having the problematic in Whisper, in the second novel, Whispers in the Mist, you kind of realize he's in a problematic marriage. Or Kill Moon, both of them. I mean, it's the ongoing saga with him, with his marriage. And I'm learning Path into Darkness, he's got some decisions to make. And I learned about, while I was writing about it, I learned about some of his inner conflicts about a certain issue, which I will not give away, that I didn't know about before, which was really fun, too. I don't know everything. I know more than readers know, but I don't know everything, and I'm continuing to always learn more with them. So,
how fun.
Yeah, that's fun.
How fun.
Yeah,
when you're writing, are you excited about it? Are you anxious? What is the feeling that you describe yourself while you're writing? How do you describe yourself?
So while I'm writing, like while I'm in that 1,000-word-a-day stage, or because there's different stages.
You tell me.
And, well, how I feel is different depending on the stage. Like during the pre-work, like the pre-writing the first draft stage, like right now, I'm anxious because I feel jittery. Like there's a story, the next story is kind of in my head, but I don't have enough information. I'm not ready to write. I always know when I'm ready to start writing that first draft because I'll start hearing the characters in dialogue with each other. And that's how I kind of know, but I'm not hearing them in dialogue yet. I'm not seeing the things I need to see in my brain yet, even though I've been doing my character analyses and doing research. And so it makes me anxious. I'm a little bit worried.
Fascinating to me to hear you say that. I've never heard anyone describe it like that. Never.
Oh, really?
Because I always wonder. No. Yeah, I'm always wondering, you know, when do you sit down and put pen to paper? Because it seems like there are some authors who just, there's no schedule, or some who are when I spoke to Daniel Silva, he said, I finish one book and I start the next. And I'm thinking, well, you must take a break. Well, no, not really. You know, I like to write. I finish one and I just go on to the other. And I'm thinking, insane to me, you know, that you don't take any time. But, I mean, I'm sure he does, but it feels like to him that he's constantly writing, that because he loves it so much, it is necessary for him to be doing that. And so I always wonder, if you have a whole lot of ideas, though, you know, how do you know which one to yank on and say, okay, I'm going to pull this thread and this is the one I'm going to go with? How do you know that that's the book you want to write if you have more than one idea?
Well, it's the one that pulls at you, that eventually sticks with you. You can't get rid of it. Yeah, you just can't get rid of it. You know, it's like, okay, I can't get rid of this idea. Like the idea I have for the fourth one, it may take me a while to write, actually. It's a little bit more, it's going to involve more research than I've needed to do in the past. But what was I going to say about it? It is an idea that I had, like, in passing years ago, like, oh, maybe I should kind of explore such and such. And it stuck with me. Like, it's still here. Like, oh, okay, you know what? It's time to write that story now. I'm ready to write it.
There you are. That's so cool.
Yeah.
We're slowly almost out of time. We have just a few minutes left. And so I know, and when I've taken way more than your 45 minutes, I want to thank Amy Hicks for being with us tonight. Hi, Amy. Thank you. I'm so glad you came on. You have to come back again,
Amy.
Okay?
I love Lisa's book, so I was happy to join in the conversation.
Thank you.
So glad that you called in. And I'm expecting you to call in the future on more shows, okay?
I will. I found you because of the Jess and Shannon double booked tour.
I know.
And I had to call in because Lisa and I are label mates.
Yes.
Publisher mates.
I love that.
Yeah.
Label mates. Don't you love that? You're of the same publisher, I guess. So that's wonderful.
Yes.
So you're going to be on this show as a caller, a regular caller, and then you're going to be on as a guest too, okay?
Absolutely.
And you and I will talk
again
soon.
I will bring virtual baked goods every time.
Thank you so much. I wish you would bring a virtual Cosmo or virtual champagne next time too.
That would be good.
I can do that. I mean, it's virtual. Why not?
Okay, very good. Amy, you and I will talk again soon. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, ma'am.
Thanks, Amy.
Good night.
Bye, Lisa.
Bye.
So cute. So before you go, we have just enough time for 5 quick questions and 5 quick answers. Are you game?
Okay, wait. Let me take a big, deep breath. Okay. Let's see how dry my brain is.
Okay. So this is really easy. This is really simple stuff. Well, and you know, it's also called Stump the Author, but we'll see how well you do.
Oh no.
So whose book is on your nightstand? Who are you reading right now?
Oh my God. So I am reading. I have 2 books on my nightstand. One of them's nonfiction, and one of them's fiction. I'm in the middle of reading In the Shadow of Gotham by Stephanie Pintoff. She'd won the Edgar for Best Debut in 2010, and then I'm kind of ashamed of myself that I never had read it. It's really good. And then you might laugh at this, because I read nonfiction, funny nonfiction, not funny, funny, but interesting, quirky nonfiction, too, to take my brain out of stories sometimes. And I'm reading a New York Times bestseller called Assholes, A Theory. That's it. It's just called Assholes, A Theory.
I love it. I do love it. I'm going to have to look it up and send away for it.
it's like part philosophy and part psychology. And the thingamajig, the blurby, the description thing on the back just has when it says, what does it mean for someone to be an asshole? And, it talks about the difference between assholes and sociopaths and just what it is. And it just, I think it's going to be really, really hilarious.
I am going to go ahead and order that book just because you said that. My next question is, when you are writing, do you like to listen to music?
When I'm at home, no. But then I like to go out to coffee houses or bistros a lot, and there's naturally there will be music and ambient noise, and I like that. So I like both.
So
when
you
I'm
can
at home,
write
I prefer
with both,
silent.
With, oh, okay. So you can write in, under both situations, quiet or noisy, ambient noise.
Yeah.
Very good. That's interesting. So in an alternate universe, there are no writers. What other profession would you like to attempt?
Oh, you know what I would be? And this is funny. Like, people who know me really well, I know you don't know. I'm going to tell you here. I would be a psychologist. I love psychology. I know I'd be a psychologist. Yeah. I know it's kind of a surprise.
Okay.
But I feel like I'm kind of like an armchair psychologist anyways. I'd probably be a psychologist if we're talking about being practical, like I have a career and all that stuff. Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. So what's the most important thing in your writer's toolbox? It can be anything.
Wow. In my writer's toolbox.
What do you absolutely need every time you sit down to write?
Well, I mean, there's the obvious things, right? Like laptop and whatever, but a way to get the writing down. But, that seems like a boring answer. And I could say my imagination, but that's kind of a boring answer too. So a slightly less boring answer is one of the things that I have in my toolbox that I must have is it goes back to that atmospheric thing, that deeply ingrained sense of place thing I have in my soul almost. I have to have that sense of place within me, feeling grounded.
Cool.
And I think it comes through in my writing a lot,
Very good. So your imagination has to be engaged, and you almost have to place yourself in your author's location. Is that right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Very cool. Yeah. So here's one that I find really interesting, and I kind of always guess the answer the right way. So when was the first time you were comfortable enough to call yourself author?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a good question. I would say for years and years before I got published, but I was writing fiction and trying to get published, I wouldn't even say I was a writer. I would say I write. I would say as a verb, I write novels. And then after a while, I started to say, I'm a writer. Like, I'm a writer, kind of timid-like. And now to say I'm an author. But after
someone asks you, what do you do? Because it feels funny, doesn't it? Because everybody tells me the same thing. When someone says, what do you do for a living, Lisa, what do you say?
I actually say I'm a writer. And then they might ask, I've got novels, and they can put the author label on me.
Read anything you've written? That's the one I love. Would I have read?
I know.
Well, probably not because you're a knucklehead, but,
I know. Are you popular? Are you an author I should know about?
Are you famous?
I don't know, no.
I know. The crazy thing, it's like, how do you answer something like that?
Well, it's weird,
Oh my God.
The whole thing with saying author versus writer, I feel like I like to say writer because writer is writing, right? That's what I do.
Yes.
It feels more like the act, the creative act. Author.
An author
feels
sounds
like,
kind of snooty, doesn't it? Author
well,
feels snooty to you.
It's snooty.
Yeah,
well,
it, does.
It feels
Everybody
like
tells
the more.
That. More highbrow.
I was going to say author feels like the public side. That feels like I'm here with you talking
okay.
on Authors in the Air. I do events
right.
in bookstores as an author. That's more like the public
right.
side to me. And
right.
so I just say writer, you know. I write novels. I might say novelist.
Well, there
yeah.
you go. Well, that's cool. Most say writer. It's inherently, that's what I hear. Unless it's a cocky newcomer. And some people, they'll say, I say it right away as soon as I have my book published. And I think, oh, God, you know. But you can't fault someone for that. I mean, it's a very wonderful title to have, for sure. Lisa, I just love talking to you, and I can't believe we're almost an hour into this show. And
this
I have
awesome.
Kept you all this time.
That's
Thank
great.
You so much
I love
for coming
it.
On. You have to come back as a host, though. You have to promise me to choose somebody that you like and come back as a host. Maybe the person who wrote Assholes, and you would like to interview them.
Yeah.
How about that?
Oh, my God. That would be fun.
that would be fun.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about this, okay?
I
hope you have a wonderful evening. I'm so glad you came on and continued great success with your books. But you
Thank
and I will talk
so
again,
much.
Okay?
Yes,
You're
we will.
So
Thank you.
Thank you
so much for
so
having
much
me.
For
that was, it
You're
was
absolutely
so fun.
Welcome. Thanks. I thought so, too. Thanks, Lisa. Have a good night. Good night.
You, too. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Sure thing. So next Friday, I'm going to be talking with Carter Wilson. Please join me, and please go pick up Lisa's book. She's just a wonderful atmospheric writer. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.